Welcome to Amped Up, Utility Insights, Trends and Challenges. I'm your host, Melissa Parvis, CEO of Athena, a consultancy and workforce solutions provider operating in the utility sector. In this podcast, we explore the ever-changing landscape of US electric utilities with great minds and insightful conversations. The world is definitely changing. People are changing, technology is changing, and with it, utilities are having to adapt. In today's episode, we'll be discussing people management and leadership and touching upon how cultures are shifting from traditional top-down management to a more people-centric approach. We'll also unpack building a killer company culture, how to motivate beyond the paycheck, align a team's purpose with creating an environment where people can really thrive, plus the power of authenticity in forging trust and driving success within a team. With me today, I have Greg Downs on the podcast. Greg is a utility management veteran. He's passionate about leadership and driving teams forward. Greg releases a lot of very informative content on LinkedIn surrounding leadership, coaching, mentoring, and generally how to make the most out of your team and be the best manager that you can be. So whether you're leading a team or you're climbing the ladder or you just love a good leadership story, this one's for you. Greg is dropping some wisdom that'll stick with you long after the mic is off. Let's jump in. Thank you so much for joining me, Greg.
Yeah, so super excited to be here. Thanks, Melissa, for having me on. My name is Greg Downs. I am a manager of performance measurement and reporting for PG&E. I've been working in the utility space for about the past decade, leading a number of different teams across both gas and electric utilities. And so I think, you know, my interest in leadership and then obviously background in utilities kind of brought us here to have this conversation.
Absolutely. I want to kick things off with your leadership philosophy. Let's talk about what you've seen in the last few years in the changes. I mean, every industry's changed so much, but COVID was like a massive spanner in the works for everyone. And I feel like we're living in a completely different world now. What kind of changes have you seen in leadership style and leadership culture and utilities?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think going into the pandemic, there was a lot of hesitancy to individuals working in a remote or hybrid environment. And so I think probably one of the biggest changes that I've seen, at least within the groups that I interact with, and I work with the officers and directors of PG&E, right, is just this sense of, it feels like there's a bigger element of trust now than there was before, right? And understanding that, you know, in person is great for things like collaboration, but at home focus time is also incredibly important, right?
Yeah.
So I think if you couple that with the balance between work and life, I've also seen quite a bit of a dynamic shift there as well, right? So going into the pandemic, obviously after the first 6 to 12 months, right, there were a lot of changes, you know, single moms, single dads, you know, who have the drop-off pickup schedules, right? They're now able to be there to help support their kids with homework, right? In other situations where it's a dual income household, parents are now able to each work their own careers and then balance raising their children and being around them a little bit more often. And so I think that was probably another leniency that didn't really exist much before the pandemic, and probably 6 to 12 months in really transformed the way that utilities see hybrid in office and fully remote work.
You know, utilities are obviously enormous organizations. Mm-hmm. PG&E is the biggest, right? So you're probably no stranger to this. As a massive organization, there's so many huge processes and policies and requirements. And I'm sure, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, was it easier pre-pandemic when everybody was in office to just like knock on John from finance's door or go in and see Kathy from HR? You know, how do you manage that when everybody's working from home, but you can't physically see where anyone is? Are they doing the work? Are they going and doing the laundry? Are they taking a break? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think in every instance, there's always an element of trust, right? And as a leader, right, it's your job to trust but verify. So when it comes to, we can kind of break it into like the trust factor and leadership qualities, right? And then also just the availability piece, right? And maybe we start with like trust. So at least from my perspective, when I work with my team, I generally have an instant, have an understanding of what work constitutes, you know, a day's worth of work, right? What the activities are. And it's my role as a leader to kind of assess the skills and the opportunities of each of my team members, get an understanding of where they're at on the scale, and then ensure that the work that I'm giving them fills their schedule, right? And is demanding and encouraging for them to continue to grow in their career, right? So I think the element of tracking everything that your employees are doing hopefully is more or less gone, right? And the reality that at the end of the day, it's your job as a leader to make sure that the individuals on your team have opportunities within your team to grow in the areas that most interest them, right? And align with their ultimate career objectives. So it's actually been, in my opinion, easier in an environment where I'm able to give my team more leniency, right? Hey, if you want to go and check out a soccer game, or if you want to coach your son or daughter's baseball team, right? To be able to allow that leniency within the workday. Hey, I understand that on Tuesdays, you're going to be out at 4, right? And then on Wednesdays and Fridays, you're going to end up working late in order to get the stuff done, cleared out before the weekend so we can hit the ground running on Monday, right? Like, you're able to provide a bit of leniency so that your team can live the work-life balance that makes the most sense to them. Mm-hmm. And then I get to focus in on the fun part for me, which is really taking the skills and the opportunities that my team has, understanding what their drivers are as far as their career trajectories and personal objectives in life, and then figuring out the tasks that I can put on their plate so that it allows them to continue to grow. And I think what you'll find is, like, you know, and you find this in like the tech industry or in like startups, right? Like, when you're actually interested in the work that you're doing, you don't need somebody looking over your shoulder and checking in every minute to figure out, like, hey, are you working? Are you doing this job? Are you getting the task done? Right? Like, enthusiasm breeds this almost sense of engagement, right? And so, yeah, your job as a leader to essentially make sure that your team, what they're doing, aligns with their objectives. And the more that you're able to align that, the less that you have to, you know, knock on doors and check in on progress, and the more that things just move themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, I think, really topical at the moment. And I think a lot of people are struggling with it, establishing what a good day looks like, allowing that trust kind of element to come through, allowing people to have flexibility, but then also making sure that, you know, you're not over micromanaging, but also just not letting people, like, not understand what's required of them.
100%. Yeah. And so I think you touched on, I think, 2 points. Obviously, there's the trust piece, right? Understanding what individuals are capable of, making sure that the tasks that you're giving them are in alignment with their career trajectories, right? That's like one aspect. And then on the other side of the coin, right? Figuring out, like, what is that trust but verify? Like, how do you ensure that your teams are stacked up and that they're going to be working when they should, right? I think there, for that second piece, what it comes down to is you as a leader are responsible for laying out the expectations of your team. The work that my team does in performance measurement is going to have different sets of requirements than somebody who's interacting with field personnel, right? And so laying out the objectives of, hey, at the end of the day, this is the criteria for success. This is what good looks like. I need you to be available between 8 and 4 to respond to customer needs, right? Versus I need you to be located close to Oakland because this is where the leaders gather, and twice a week you need to go and put your face in front of them so they remember who you are, right? So there's an element of being able to assess, and this is like a maturity thing for leaders, right? Assess what's required of your team. You need to lay out the criteria very clearly, and then you need to hold everyone on your team accountable to that criteria. What that ends up doing over time is it develops a culture on your team, right? It helps them understand, like, what areas are hyper important and what are the areas where they have the opportunity to flex a little bit. For some jobs, right? Like, if you're responding to 811 ticket calls, right? Or emergency calls, you know, 8 to 9 hours a day, depending on what your work schedule looks like. Sorry, but you have to be available next to a phone, like, during certain business hours. If your job's a little bit more technology focused, where most of the work that you're doing is focus work and not really stakeholder or client based, you then have a little bit more flexibility to say, all right, I attend my calls in the morning to get through my operating reviews. During the middle of the day is really my heads down focus time. I pick my kids up at 3 o'clock and then I take a break for a couple of hours and hit, you know, really the hyper-focused work in the evening. depending on where you're at in the organization and the level of work that you're doing, the level of stakeholder engagement that's required of you, it's really the manager's job or the leader's job to lay out what that criteria of good looks like and then hold their team accountable.
Yeah, definitely. Well said. You know, there's a really scary statistic that 50% of utility experienced people are meant to retire in the next 10 years. And so we need a huge amount of people from Gen Z and probably eventually Gen Alpha to join the workforce. But then Gen Z say that I can't remember the statistic, but it's some massive percentage are looking for 100% remote work. So that begs the question, how are utility managers and leaders going to upskill people in an industry that's very niche and also attract those people when you have massive tech firms like Google and Meta that are allowing 100% remote work, pay 20% above market average, and quite frankly are just cooler than the local utility?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think at the surface, you could definitely see that, like, you know, a tech company is going to be more trendy. And so, like, when you think tech, you think of innovation, right? You think of excitement, right? And that's great. I think that every industry has its pros and cons, right? You know, in a tech world, they're going to expect different levels of hours and commitment, right? I have friends who work for Facebook, Meta, you know, Intel, right? And the culture there is one of, like, dude, you're the reason they're feeding you is because you're working around the clock. Yeah. And that's fine. And that's great. And actually, I think, like, for early, you know, individuals who are launching into a career, there is an element of, like, you got to put in the grunt work to get the expertise so that you can provide that value to an enterprise, right? And for some people, that tech life is the best move for them. Now, I think on the other side of that, on the other side of that coin, like, you know, utilities do have, like, a, you know, they're, when you look at them on the surface, they may look more boring. But the reality of it is, like, we're being challenged, and I'll speak for myself. You know, I'm a younger individual, and I love working for PG&E because the atmosphere and the culture is one of innovation. Look, like, utility bills for all of forever have continued to go up, right? And they just go up incrementally year over year, year over year, year over year. It's the way that utility and commodity prices work. And so I think, you know, when I'm looking at PG&E specifically, us over here on the West Coast, where we're pushing the envelope on things like, you know, renewables and trying to figure out how to green our gas supply, right? And green the supply of energy, like, be completely greenhouse gas emission free by, I think the commission has us targeting like 2041 or something. Like, that's only a few years away. And so the level of innovation that it takes and the level of curiosity that it takes in an organization to do something like that is actually incredibly high. So I think an example, anyway, I'm not going to deter anybody from that sentiment. Like, sure, you can continue to look at the tech companies, and there is a certain level of excitement that comes with working for an exciting company like that, right? On the other side, though, I think utilities are being pushed, and I see this within PG&E and the transformative breakthrough thinking that we've essentially been forced to create as the result of things like catastrophic wildfires, and then our leadership team taking stands like catastrophic wildfires will stop, like, not just with PG&E, everywhere. It's like, that's a big stand. Like, how do you accomplish something like that? The tone of our leadership team has essentially changed from about, you know, over the course of at least the last 10 years that I've been here, from something of, hey, we do this work the way that we've done it for forever because this is the way that we do it and it works well. So, like, why change? To now the question is, look, we need to figure out a way to lower rates over the long run for our customers. What needs to be true? And the reality of it is, nobody knows. And at the highest level of our organization, the vulnerability that's been opened up is, like, you know, we've got officers basically coming to their teams and they're saying, like, you are the subject matter experts. We don't know how we're going to figure this out, but we all know that we need to figure this out. Bring the ideas to the table.
Wow.
And so, like, with that, over the past 3 years, at least, I've seen an openness that has never been the case for at least the industry that I've worked in over here in the utilities, right? It's like we have everyone bringing their ideas and expertise to the table and challenging one another openly in these meetings about, like, the best way to get to a point where we can do things that are, you know, considered breakthrough in nature. Like, how do we lower bills for customers over the long run? So, when you talk about excitement, I mean, surface level, tech companies may seem exciting, and that's great. I think the other side of that coin is like utilities are being kind of forced to be innovative. And the stands that our executive leadership team has taken here at PG&E are really challenging and pushing the envelope on what innovation should look like in the utility space. And that's why I'm excited to come to work every day.
Yeah,
I get to create that atmosphere for my team. It's supported by our executive officers who are plowing the way and essentially putting their hands up and saying, hey, team, like, we don't know really what it's going to take to get here, but we need to make things safe. We can't have wildfires. We need lower bills. What do we need to do that? Go and dig into your pockets, bring your expertise, and let's work together to figure out what needs to change.
Mm, that's awesome. What a people-centric approach to what is a super complex problem that I don't think is going to be easily solved anytime soon. Let's talk a little bit more about authenticity when it comes to leadership. How do you balance authenticity with corporate objectives? As massive companies are all very similar in this respect, they all have corporate objectives. Sometimes it's very hard to see the light when you're not, you know, up there next to the CEO or the C-suite or the VPs. How do you balance that?
Yeah, I love that. When it comes down to balancing, you know, so corporate objectives, what are they? They're things that are in the best interest of the company, right? They're going to move the needle for the organization. So personally, I take ownership of that. Like, that's my job as a leader to basically figure out, okay, what's my team's role in moving the needle for the company, right? So when it comes down to developing a culture that ultimately unites around, you know, pushing the envelope for the company and moving them forward, it's really the leader's job to figure out how do you connect the dots and paint that picture for the team to latch onto. And so I think it really boils down to two things. Number one, you have to have a good understanding of both the objectives of the organization and then the skills, opportunities, and requirements of your team. Okay, so that's the first piece. Understanding the objectives over here on one side, the skills, the opportunities, and the requirements that your team needs to deliver. And then on the other side, you need to then connect the dots and create an atmosphere that allows your team to take on the burden of making that those objectives possible. So when it comes down to authenticity and how you balance being authentic with like corporate objectives and deliverables, like I think about like corporate objectives and deliverables as things like, you know, brushing your teeth. Like, everybody's got to brush their teeth. Like, we understand that at the end of the day, we need to, like, my team needs to deliver scorecards that are useful for our stakeholders here at PG&E. All the officers and directors are looking at their KPIs on a daily basis, right? Like, that's something that you have to check in. And then the authenticity piece of it comes from you essentially allowing the creativity of your team to say, all right, great. We've got the objectives of the company. We know what our goals are. The leader has connected the dots to show how what we're doing is adding value. And so for me personally, how can I bring my skills to the table such that we can move the needle for this team in meeting company objectives? So, you know, I think it really all boils down to responsibility. The more that you can give responsibility to your team, lay out the vision, lay out the objectives, connect the dots to show how what you're doing is actually impactful, and then you give them the responsibility and ownership to actually go out and do there, you create an authentic culture, one that's aligned and one that knows that when I come to work every day, the work that I'm doing is impactful and meaningful.
Yeah.
And there's ways that you can do that. Obviously, we won't like dig into the deep. We can dig as deep as you want. You know, because there's an element of laying out the vision, connecting the dots, giving responsibility. But like, we could dive into like, what does that mean to give somebody responsibility? How do you delegate appropriately such that they feel responsibility and accountability, but you're still protecting as a leader? There's a lot of different elements of creating the culture that you need in order to get from these are the tasks that will meet the objectives of the company. And this is how I know that my work is meaningful. But at the end of the day, like, I think if you just boiled it down to connect the dots between objectives of the company, objectives of the team, leveraging the skills such that you can give responsibility and accountability to your team to push the needle, you'll find that over time, like, the authentic culture just has to exist. Because if team members are taking the burden on themselves and are saying, these are the skills that I have to bring to the table, it's almost like what we talked about at the start of the call, the enthusiasm is going to exist.
Mm. Vision and purpose is huge for especially younger people entering into the workforce, not just in utilities, all over. It's right. One of the key drivers for them in being established in a corporate business and wanting to do good work. How, I mean, obviously throughout PG&E, throughout all organizations, they'll be creating a vision and trying to create a purpose, but how do you as a leader ensure that your vision and purpose of your team is aligned with the vision and purpose of the company? What techniques do you have, maybe?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, I think there's an element of each leader, each person has gifts, right, that they bring to the table. And so as a leader, you have to be good at connecting the dots, right? I mean, you just have to, right? Like if you're leading a team and you're saying, hey team, like we're going to go and hike up this big mountain, like they're going to look at you and be like, why? Like, that's going to suck. Like, why would we want to do that? It's like, oh, well, at the end of the day, like, you know, what is the situation? Like, we are trying to get stronger. You guys are all here because you joined my gym. And so one of the craziest things for us to do is go climb this mountain. And by the time we get to the top, we're going to be stronger than we were when we were at the bottom. You know, like, so that's like one example of how you as a leader, like, are required to take what reality is, what the task is at hand, then connect the dots. You know, it's the same thing in an organization. When you have company objectives, and this is part of like the annual goal setting process that my team helps facilitate for large parts of the organization, right? You're going to have key objectives that the leadership team lays out. And then you're going to have team objectives, things that are core competencies within your team. Your job as a leader is then to connect the dots. And so I think as a leader, really in any organization, whether it's in the utility space or anywhere else, like one of your biggest jobs is laying out that vision for how the work that you and your team does actually adds value and helps the company meets its goals.
Mm. What are your thoughts on change management? Because historically, utilities have not known to be the best industry that moves with change management well. And historically, some employees haven't been super on board with a lot of change. And there's a lot of change that's happening right now in the utility industry with all of the increased electricity demand that we're seeing. What are your thoughts on that? And your thoughts on maybe there's some people in the team that are always driving forward, some that aren't sitting on their laurels and not really helping but not hindering, but then sometimes there's people that actively hinder the process, they actively work against it. How do you tackle things like that?
So if we want to tackle the employee component, I mean there's a couple of pieces that you touched on in there. One with just like broader change management, how do you lead in an environment where there's like active and aggressive change, right? And so maybe if we touch on that first, The first thing is action beats inaction every time. And so there will be elements of unknown as you're leading your team into new spaces, right? And as you're learning more and developing more, the best thing that you can do as a leader is to continue pushing forward and create an environment of openness, right? What that's going to allow you to do is basically say, hey, like vulnerability here, team, I don't 100% know how this is going to impact us here over the long run. What I do know is that our objective as a team is to do X. I can connect the dots to say, based on what I do know, this seems like the right direction for us to go in. Let's start marching forward together. And we're going to work together as we hear more and we're going to adapt as we go, right? Like having those types of conversations with your team allows you to create that culture of openness that's going to allow you to succeed in moments of, you know, extreme change. So I think that's one element. The other side of that coin, you're talking about employees who maybe don't get on board and they're like digging their heels in. They're like, we don't want to change. We don't want to go to SAP HANA. You know, like we don't want to take on this new tool and technology. Like we love the way that we've been running reports out of Excel and sending them off to the commission, whatever the case may be. Right.
I've heard that on repeat.
Yeah. And so I think if we go back to something we touched on earlier, it's your job as a leader to lay out the requirements, right? What's expected of the team, and then to hold everybody accountable to those requirements, right? What that does is it basically gets everybody on board who's going to be on board, and then it encourages others to like look for opportunities that are going to be better suited for them, right? It also allows you to have those harder conversations from a stance of objectivity rather than subjectivity, right? So if you think about it this way, right? Like, I'm a big fan of like openness and honesty, right? I think if you're open and honest as a leader, and like some leaders may contest me on this, they'll be like, oh no, like you don't have to always be honest. You don't always have to say what's on your mind. And I'm like, yeah, to a certain extent, I agree that filters are important. But when you're working with your team and you're trying to create a culture You are the one that defines what that culture is, right? We work hard, we're tenacious, we're authentic, right? We're trustworthy, we don't lie. If something comes up and it's gonna throw us off track, we raise it to the surface. PG&E, speak up, listen up, follow up. Me as a leader, I create an environment where you feel, you know, respected enough to speak up when something doesn't feel right. Great, how do I enforce that? Well, when you speak up, I actually go and take action and I follow up to tell you what happened, right? So there's an element of you need to create a culture by outlining what, you know, that culture actually looks like. You then need to reinforce it with the conversations that you're having with your team so that when you get to situations like, hey, we're going through some change, it's a bit of a reorganization. With that, we have new work that's coming in. I need you to take this on because you have, you know, skills and expertise in this particular area. And they're like, well, I don't want to do it the way that it's been doing. I'd like to change it myself. I mean, there's an element of, yeah, I get that. Let's do it for a year. Let's figure out what the other teams were doing since we're taking this on as new work. And then once we get through the first cycle of it, it's your baby, right? Like, let's go and enhance it. PG&E has adopted this whole culture of transformative change, continuous improvement. And yeah. I think it's kind of grounded in a lot of the virtues that PG&E has spoken about, you know, that we all live by in the PG&E culture. An element of that is continuous improvement. And one piece that's very important to continuous improvement or project management is facilitating lessons learned at the end of each project.
Yeah.
So whenever my team takes on new work, or whether when we're rolling into an environment of we rolled out a tool, maybe the technical components weren't as geared up as we thought they were. So there's a lot higher of an administrative burden in the short run, with the hopes that in the future we can automate some of the administrative burden so that we can get back out to doing the fun creative work, right? There's always an element of like, it doesn't always have to be this way. The reality of it is like we do have, you know, the ability to change, you know, to choose our own adventure. And where that comes from is really, hey, if you take accountability, you own the work that you do, and then you lead with curiosity, then naturally what's going to happen is you're going to get really good at the work that you've been asked to get good at over the short term. And then over the long run, you are going to get complete ownership to essentially make a case. If we need to do things differently because the way that we're doing it is not the right way, that's great. Let's get through one cycle and then you show me, create the business case. And then me as your leader, it's my job to make sure that I support you or tell you where that idea is going to, you know, get knocked off kilter. So yeah, in an environment where people are digging their heels in, I think at the end of the day, like it's just laying out at the beginning what that culture is, what are the tenets of that culture, and then holding everyone accountable. And as long as you continue to do that and you're like firm in, hey, no, we actually all do work hard and this is what hard work looks like on this team. And when somebody's slacking, you have that conversation with them. It comes from honestly, it comes from more of like an objective perspective of like, I love and I care for you, right? Like, I know that you're a hard worker. Seems like you missed the mark on these things. Let me know what's going on in your life so that we can figure out a way to get you back on board and get you having fun again.
Yeah, good deal. You know, I hear a lot, two common things why people love working for utilities so much. And I want to hear your thoughts on this, Greg. Number one is the people. Working with people that become your very close friends that you care about, that care about you, working as a team together. Also, working to better your communities. You're doing something that genuinely helps your entire community, your local community. And also, utilities tend to be in their workforce representative of the local community. A divergence in race, in age, in background, in education. You get to work with lots of different kinds of people, but also come together and notice that there's actually very little that separates us. And the other thing is also the stability. I'll touch upon that later, but I want to touch upon the community, sense of community. Why is it that utilities, in your opinion, have been so good at breeding that sense of community and togetherness?
Yeah, I love it. Probably because we're made up of, just like you said, we're all made up of the community, right? So the people who we serve, our stakeholders, our customers, are the people who live next door to us, across the street. And in every case, like, we're all paying the same bill that they are, right?
That's true.
So there's an element of we're integrated in that culture and community. And so, you know, for me and a lot of my fellow utility workers, right, it's like, I think that's a sense of honor, right? The fact that we get to serve our neighbors, our customers, our stakeholders, the people around us, the people at the store, and then engage and have those conversations about the things that either frustrate them or the opportunities, the questions that they have about like the regulatory landscape and how that actually impacts things like bills. It's great for us to be that spokesperson for our company. I like it. I enjoy it. And I know that a lot of my fellow workers feel the same.
Yeah. The second piece I wanted to talk about is stability. And that's obvious, right? However, times are changing. We've mm-hmm. got, you mentioned, you alluded to the requirements of more efficiency, the push of efficiency mm-hmm. from regulating bodies. There's a lot of change that's going to happen. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but in the next 5 or 10 years with AI, I think there's going to be a lot of computers doing a lot of our jobs. That coupled with the push for efficiency, I could potentially see some layoffs happening and maybe that element of stability not quite being so salient with utilities. What are your thoughts on that? And how do you think people will adapt to that? Or how should they adapt as well? Because it's something people should start thinking about.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's interesting because I've been getting into AI quite a bit. I'm a big fan of it. I think there are amazing opportunities that when you introduce new technologies, like we don't even know how we may be able to apply AI or other automation systems in order to alleviate some of the stresses and the work that we do here within the company and what that might, like the benefits that it may have our stakeholders and our customers, right? When I think about moving into a new landscape, my thought is like, continue to bring your creativity, to the table, and there will always be opportunities for you, right? So I don't know what the future looks like for the utility industry, but I do know that it probably looks better 10 years from now than it is today. And so my job is to continue to bring my element of curiosity, to always push the envelope on connecting, right, the objectives of my team with the objectives of the company as a whole, and then making sure that I can still see the value in the services that we're offering, right? We touched on this a little bit earlier with one of your other questions. I think trust and authenticity are incredibly important. Being transparent and open, also very important for creating a culture where people would want to stay and continuing to work with you. And so I think in a landscape where things are changing and we're moving and we're introducing new technologies and how that might rock the boat with utilities in the future, I think the reality of it is we don't know. We don't really know how that's going to, how that's going to change things, but we do know that something's probably going to change. And so it's our jobs as leaders to essentially learn what we can about the technologies as they're being introduced, see if there's good applications for them, and then look to our teams, see what their skills and their opportunities are, see where their growth trajectories are, what their interests are, because there actually may be opportunities for them to start leveraging some of these tools. And actually, we've done quite a bit of this on my team and some of my sister teams, where we're investigating how can we use some of these out of the box automation tools to make our jobs easier, which have allowed us to lean out our support structure and essentially go from, my team used to support like a microcosm of PG&E. And over the past 2 years, we've been able to grow and support the entire enterprise.
Wow.
With essentially awesome. Keeping our workforce flat, right? And the only reason that we've been able to do that is through the curiosity that, me and my peer leaders have had in saying, hey, how do we get a little bit better? There's some new technologies out there. Let's investigate what we can do with Power Apps. And when we integrate that with Copilot, right? Like, how can this make our jobs easier? How can we then train our team, get them in the right trainings where they can up-level their skills? So I personally, and I may be wrong, and that's fine. You can call me out on it 10 years from now. We can sit down and have a coffee and say, Greg, you kind of missed the mark here, right? But when I think about things like AI and new technologies being introduced into the workforce, it's going to be something that happens over time.
Yeah, of course.
Whether that time horizon is 5 years, 1 year, it's definitely not going to happen in 6 months where we're going to have half of our workforce laid off.
No.
But the goal of management is to take a look at the future, right? That could be company objectives. It could be the landscape of what's happening in the technology space. And then you ultimately have those close relationships with your team such that you can help them prosper in new environments. So anyway, I think it boils down to accountability from the leadership team. Like you should always be learning about what the skills and the aptitudes are of your team so that as new technologies get introduced, you can open up the opportunities for them, help them grow in those particular areas. And then over time, hopefully it's just a mute point.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you guys in your team and your leadership sector of PG&E is really at the forefront. Do you see that throughout the company, that everybody is at the forefront with implementing AI, being curious about AI? Because even if I take my personal social circle, there is such a wide range. Some people are so into it. Mm-hmm. Some people are kind of scared of it. They don't really want to know, you know. Is, what do you yeah. see in your organization?
Oh, I think it's, you know, as much as we are part of our customer base and so we're diverse in the way that we think and the backgrounds that we have, I think within a utility group, you know, a company that has 27,000 employees across yeah. the service territory and just how regionally diverse California is, you get the same thing. I mean, you're going to have some leaders who are very against it, some leaders who are very proponents of it, some leaders who are skeptical, some leaders who look at this as like a tool that could make us better and stronger and faster and more lean and more efficient. And so, you know, I think the piece that I'm hopeful about is when I look at our executive officers and the tone that they set for the company, right? They're very much of the mindset, like curiosity is literally baked into their DNA, every yeah. single one of them. And I have, you know, relationships with each of them. And it's like, they are so curious about doing things better that, but they also are so empathetic where they understand, you know, the backgrounds and the divergent backgrounds of everybody that works for them, right? So I think you're going to get, just like you would when you look at, you know, across a service territory or a client base or a customer base, you're going to get divergent interests and opinions. You're going to get the same thing within our group as well. But the cool part is that we have an officer team and a director team that is generally curious. And I think with that comes some stability, and let's continue allowing our teams to learn, because they're the best ones who are suited to drive innovation for the company and for our customers.
One of the things that I've always been interested in, and this is like a personal problem that I have, yeah. is balancing stress with managing people. And I don't know whether that's something that you experience at PG&E, but it's really hard to keep emotionally, I don't know, stoic when there's so much going on. Do you ever have yeah. really busy periods at PG&E where you have to deal with things like that?
100%.
Yeah.
And I think in your listener base, I imagine across all utilities, everybody feels the same thing. Mm. Like the reality of it is that like life is hard, and like work is hard too, right? So whether it's your personal life or your work life that's bringing the stressors upon you, whether it's the drive for innovation or the squeeze in order to become more efficient, those are all things that are incredibly stressful. So from my perspective, the best way to deal with that is, hey, life's hard. You better get used to doing hard things. So what I'm serious, right? Like, I mean, think about it, right? If you're, say you're a marathon runner, and like that may seem hyper insensitive, but like to my peer managers, we have conversations about this all the time. You know,
it's
this is really difficult. This is a stressful environment. Like, I don't know, like, you know, or like the squeeze is very apparent. It's like, yeah, the squeeze is always going to be there. You're always going to be asked to do more with less, right? And so how can you create your own persona such that you can handle these questions as they come in and still maintain your positivity and optimism, which ultimately allow you to bring your team along with you, right?
Wow.
And I think one of the best ways that you can do that is to make sure that, one, you're getting time and space yourself. That's important. And then two, this is my own, you know, personal take on it, is if you get really good at challenging yourself in the areas where you don't really need to do hard stuff, but you're doing it anyways, then when the hard things come to you, they're much easier to handle. You know, for me, this really boils down to having quick wins at the start of the day, right? Like I wake up, I do a cold plunge first thing in the morning. I go to the gym. I hit a workout. It's the hardest thing ever. I do CrossFit, whatever. I'm a part of the cult of CrossFit. I just do it because it's really difficult, and I'm done by 5:55 in the morning. I come home. I have my project list baked out the night before. I hit the hardest project first. I get it off my to-do list. And guess what? The rest of the day is easy. Those quick wins help generate. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's every day. That's just like every day for me, right? And so for me, when difficult things then come my way, it's like, I've already got the hard stuff out of the way. You know, and so when they come to me and a new stakeholder comes in, they're complaining about a project, or they're complaining because we just rolled a dashboard out and the executive officers want changes and they're not happy with how quickly they can get changes. Like, I just take everything in stride. And I realize that, look, at the end of the day, like, my priorities are what they are, right? It's like faith, family, work, right? And so work comes after I put everything else in check. And so I will work hard. I will work as hard as I can, but I'm also going to tell you what's possible. And I think that's helped allow me and a lot of the peer managers that I work with to show up in a manner that's authentic, be transparent about what we can and cannot do. And then obviously, right, like just coming back to my own personal philosophy of doing hard things, like do hard things now, it gets easier later. Like, you can bake that into every single day of your life, and all the stressors of leading a very demanding work life and then balancing that with, like, we have four kids who are all very young, right? And then still finding time to show up for your wife and be happy and love spending time with her, right? Even when you've had, you know, maybe a very challenging day, all of the rest of that stuff is relatively easy.
So it's about putting yourself first in your personal self-care. It's about doing the hard stuff first, putting it first so you get it out the way, and then the little quick wins. And then it's about managing expectations of people above and below you, of what you do have time for, what you can achieve, and what you really can't.
100%. And I think the piece that you touched on, like probably the most important aspect of that, is if you don't take care of you, you can't take care of others. Right. So making sure that you're taking the 10 minutes at the start of every day to ground yourself, have gratitude, focus in on like what your life objectives are, and narrow that into your day's objectives, right? Like, taking that time to actually reflect on you sets you up for success.
What's been the most challenging time of your career?
I think there's like different elements of things that have been challenging throughout my career. I think anytime you're introduced to something that's new, there's a bit of challenge there. Probably more recently, one of the challenges was my team basically went from supporting, you know, director and senior director individuals to supporting officers, right? And I think just learning how to speak in environments where you're supporting an officer is a little bit different than working with like a director or a senior director. So over the past 5 years, right, there's been like an evolution of like the support that my team offers. And so leveling people up such that, you know, I don't need to be on the call. My principals and experts can go into the meeting with the officers, right, and show up in a manner that allows us to direct the conversation with people who have very strong opinions. That's probably been a difficult challenge, like to actually sit down. All right, training's hard. And the reason why training is hard is because like a lot of people can tell you like this is what good looks like, but they have a really hard time articulating what you have to do in order to get good.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the reasons why change as a leader, when then you have to train your team on like new things, is so difficult, is because none of us, like, it's so much easier to just like roll into the day and just like roll with the punches than say, all right, I need, like, I'm doing this thing right now and I'm figuring it out and it's actually going quite well. But now I have like 10 times the number of stakeholders that I have to interact with. And the reality of it is I can't meet with all of them. Like, I need my team to step up and like go and have these difficult conversations with leaders who are very experienced at, you know, providing great hard hitting questions and then having an opinion. Like, you have to have an opinion, right? As a leader. I mean, you do, you gotta have an opinion. Especially if you want to take your team along with you, right? Because you got to be able to sell the goals and the objectives, and then you bring people along with you. So I think one of the hardest things that I've done more recently is just trying to figure out how do I boil down what does, like, taking the what does good look like and then boiling it down into actionable items for my teams who are venturing into conversations that are not really known to them, right? But I've also gotten a lot of joy and satisfaction out of that too, because it forces me to prioritize my day, take the time to actually write down the recipe, test out the recipe to make sure that I didn't miss anything, and then cater it to each individual, what their aptitudes are and what their opportunities are.
Mm. You're so passionate about this leadership management piece. And in fact, I know you're so passionate. You mentioned to me the other day that you're either planning on launching a podcast or have you already launched it?
Yeah, so very passionate about leadership. I've been a studier of leadership my entire life. I was involved with some leadership camps at a very young age and kind of pushed into those, and then have had an opportunity to hold leadership positions in sports and then in work over the past like 15 years, right? And so, yeah, leadership's something that's really near and dear to me. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, like, we were talking about how do you trust your team, right? And like, how do you bring people along with you? Like, the most important thing that you can do is to figure out what they're interested in and then give them an opportunity to go and do that and do more of that. Well, me, I'm in a pretty fortunate position where it's like, I get to work with leaders across like a very large organization, amazing leaders that all have their own skills and aptitudes. I get to interact with them. I get to learn like the things that they do well, in my opinion, you know, and then the things where, hey, if I was in your role, I would probably do a little bit different. I get to observe. And so, you know, I think I've just been really fortunate to ride out the career that I'm in, continue to have opportunities to grow and develop. And then now I'm in a position where I get to interact with leaders across a very broad organization, and outside of the utility space, to figure out, hey, what does good leadership look like, right? And then try to go and implement those on myself and do a little real-time testing to figure out what works and what doesn't. So yeah, podcast, I haven't started a podcast, but I do put a lot of information out there on LinkedIn. I'm now on TikTok and X, so feel free to, to follow me. Yeah, yesterday.
What kind of stuff have you put out so far on X? I mean, I've seen your stuff on LinkedIn, but on X and TikTok.
Yeah, so everything that I'll be putting out is geared around personal and leadership development.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Not
so
necessarily
motivation, focus, right? How to lead teams, situational adaptations to flexing your leadership style, right? Like, that sort of stuff is really what I'm into. And so putting the content out there, if that's something you're interested in, I'd encourage you to follow me.
Yeah, I will. Don't you worry. you're super passionate about this stuff. It really comes through. And there's not many people who are doing this in the utility industry, you know, really like putting themselves out, but it takes a lot of courage and a lot of vulnerability. So really good on you, Greg.
Appreciate you. Yeah, this is new uncharted territory for me. It's a fun learning opportunity. And I know that I'm going to improve over time. And I think it comes down to, I mean, if you're really curious, I talked about the importance of doing hard things, right? If you choose to do hard things, then the hard things that choose you are definitely easier. It's fact. There's actually physiological stuff that, like, you know, we could get into that another time over a coffee and we could really dive in. But like, this is difficult. I think it's difficult to speak on camera. And so a lot of people kind of shy away from it. But for me, one of the cool things about doing something like this is, as hard as it is and as terrible as I am today, I know that 6 months from now, if I do this every day, I'm actually going to be really good.
It's true. The more you do it, the more you build that muscle, the more it easier it is to speak. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we encourage other people to do it too. Share the love, spread the information, you know?
Absolutely, 100%. And so with your podcast, what episode number is this?
This is episode number, I want to say 8 or 9.
Sweet.
Yeah.
What's your goal for 2025?
Huh, that's a good question. I don't want to put a goal onto it because I just like doing it. And if nobody listens to it, that's okay. I like making friends, and I get to make friends with people like you. And I know that people do listen to it, and it's getting more traction. Actually, I've had some really like funny things happen. Like, people get in touch with me, like media have started to get in touch with me. I'm only at episode 7, 8. Wow. I'll have like random people from like universities who are like studying like masters in electrical engineering and stuff get in touch with me and ask me technical questions about utilities. And I'm like, oh, wow. So that's awesome. Probably what's up the street for you as well, Greg. Honestly, like, it's a really interesting thing. I'm glad I did it. It took a lot of courage, but it's been really worth it. And it's definitely worth pursuing if you're interested in doing it.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna, you know, prod at that a little bit and get some tips and tricks as I venture into that space. You know, time is limited over at the Downs household with the four crazy ones running around. But I think, you know, to your point, right? Like, if you're interested in something, it's easy to find the time. You're finding the time. I mean, you're the owner of a company, right? Like, you're a woman-owned business, right? Like, you've got a lot of work on your plate already, just with like the space that you're in. And then you're doing this on top of it. But I'm inspired by you, right? And just the fact that you launched this thing, what, like 6 months ago or something? When did you launch?
Yeah, I launched my business in 9 months ago or something. And then I launched this. Well, actually, it takes 3 or 4 months to launch a podcast and then to actually start putting out episodes. I started in January putting out the episodes, but I started in August. It takes a long time.
That's awesome. But you've already released you said this is number 9. So you're like well on your way to continuing to crush it. I'm just excited to see how much content, you know, you end up putting out. My wife and I were actually watching a couple of your YouTube videos last night. She was like, so what kind of podcast are you going on? I'm going on Melissa's podcast. Go check it out. And we were watching them and having fun. I think you've had some pretty cool individuals on your podcast so far. And I'm just looking forward to learning more.
Awesome. Sounds good, Craig. Absolutely. You know, we're almost at time. It's been a really fabulous conversation. Mm-hmm. What do you think your podcast is going to be called?
I have no idea.
Okay, we'll see. What's your handle X and on TikTok?
Yeah, so you can go ahead and look up Coach Greg Downs. There's very few posts today, depending on when this airs, but there will be a lot in the future. So keep following it. There'll be daily posts updated, and then you can always follow me on LinkedIn at Greg Downs. You'll find me. I'm the dude who works for PG&E. And I'm looking forward to getting some feedback from others on their own leadership journeys and tips and tricks that they have.
That's awesome. Definitely go and give Greg a follow. Thank you so much, Greg. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Awesome. Thanks, Melissa. This was fun.
Thank you for listening to Amped Up. If you like this conversation, please support this content. Subscribe and rate the show on YouTube, Apple Podcast, or Spotify.